Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.
All right, guys, welcome to the show. Keith Razor with my trusty sidekick, Alan Lee. How you doing, Alan?
How are you doing there? Howdy.
Howdy. A couple of things before we get into rolling. I actually do have a stand-up date, ladies and gentlemen. On June 24th, I'll be in Vegas at the Canchelis Cantina, which is 3246 East Desert Inn Road, and I'll be there at 9 o'clock for Jack's show. It's social distancing, so I think they're only allowing like 60 people, but you got to make your reservations, you know, so make your reservations and give them a call at area code 702-909-7773. Again, the number is 702-909-7773. Make your reservations for Wednesday, June 24th at 9 p.m. I'm going to be doing my first gig in 3 months, and I'm very thankful and excited for Jack to do it. So just plugging that around, and so that's all I got. What about you, Alan?
Well, what I got is a cup of coffee and a biscuit.
A cup of coffee and a biscuit?
Yeah.
Is that
and whipped cream.
And whipped cream. That's your diet nowadays, right?
Well, yeah, you mentioned that it is a fact, yeah.
I'm on.
But I'll tell you, I'm sorry, you know, I didn't catch Jack who?
Jack Slammy. He's a Vegas comic.
Oh.
He runs shows in Vegas.
Oh, you didn't say the last name. I was confused. I don't remember you telling me this last week.
Oh, no,
I
just booked it like 2 days ago. So.
Cool. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I'm going to Vegas.
You're working during Corona, bro.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's doing me a favor just giving me a spot. I don't think I'm going to get paid for it, but I'm going to be in Vegas anyway. And, you know, so I'm just excited because I haven't done comedy in 3 months. So I'm like, you know, and I'm going to be there anyway. And he's being very nice.
Beautiful.
And generous. And, you know, I told him I'll plug the show. And you know what?
Yeah.
As a comic, I should plug the show regardless. You know what I mean? Regardless if you're getting paid or not. It's part of the job, you know what I mean? And people are scared right now to go outside and, you know, to do things. I think there has to be a point where we have to come back, you know what I mean? And I think this is a good start. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just going to tell you one thing, though. I think it's important. You don't kiss anyone when you're in the club.
Oh, no, no. I think...
No, because I know sometimes you see a girl... And, you know, you'll be tempted to hug her and then maybe, you know, kiss her a little bit. And I think you should sort of wait on that, bro. It's just my advice. I don't want to, you know.
You're saying I hook up with all my fans? Is that what you're saying?
No. You hug a girl, be careful. I don't know who the girl is. What do I know? I'm not in Vegas. I'm just telling you, be careful.
That was a nice little rapey comment from Alan Lee.
man, that's cool.
No, I'm excited though. I'm doing that. Also, I'm on Cameo. You could book me on Cameo for $15, and I'll do no filter shout outs for you. Maybe you want to, you know, you want me to break
for
up?
Me?
Yeah, for you. Maybe you want me to break up with your girlfriend, or you know.
Oh, I see.
You know,
no, I'm
you
okay.
Pay me on Cameo,
okay.
And I'll do it. I'll be like, hey. Samantha, Alan Lee, you know Alan Lee, your boyfriend, he finds you hideous, and he thinks you should go bye-bye. Yeah, but I'll make it more fun.
Well, let me think on that.
Yeah.
Let me think on that.
Because you were telling me you were kind of over Samantha.
Well, that was over years ago, so I don't even know why you're bringing her up like that. And,
because I just got on Cameo.
I just don't appreciate it.
All right. Well, guys, today we have a great guest. I just got to read out his bio. He has a mate. He's an actor, a drummer, a singer, an author, Some of the movies he's been in is the Innocent Saga movies. There's like 13 of these movies where he played Colin Donovan. That's probably what he's most known for, is the Innocent Saga. And there's 13 of those. Saga movies, I always thought a saga was like three. I didn't know it was like 13.
It can be, the number varies. Yeah. You know, it's just up to the,
But there's a three in
it. It's usually long, you know.
And then he was in a Maso Seni, Sunrise, which is an independent movie that won lots of rewards. And he's in The Green Ghost, which is with Danny Trejo, which came out a couple years ago.
Trejo.
I'm saying Trejo wrong. Whatever.
Don't say Trejo. Trey, like a tray.
Trejo.
Yeah.
He would be
Trey, and then like a ho.
He would be fun to get, wouldn't he? I would just be like,
we're anticipating contacting him. We talked about that.
We'll be like, hey, Danny Trejo, and then you'll be like, no, his name's Danny Trejo, and then you'll fuck with my head again. Remember, you did that with Debbie to guitar, whatever. What is his name? Guitar is good. You did that to me. It messed me up. Threw me off my
guitars.
And then
you're scaring me.
That's what I do, baby. And then he's also an author. He's written many books like Dark Motive, A Rise of an Outlaw, and Mascular, which is the one that just came out a couple weeks ago. And it's actually gotten so good reviews that it's being made into a motion picture. And it's called Mascular at Agua Caliente. I'm saying it totally wrong, right?
Is that a Spanish word? Is that Caliente?
Caliente, yes. It's like a hot tavern.
Yeah. Beautiful.
All right. The great Craig Rainey, ladies and gentlemen. Craig Rainey. So we're going to give him a call right now, and we're going to call him now. Sam said hit the blue button, so I'm hitting the blue button. All right. Something happened. Okay. Maybe are you still there, Alan?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm fine.
Oh.
There it is.
Okay.
I haven't talked to you in so long. How are you doing?
Hey, Craig, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, hey, Craig. Alan, you're there too?
I certainly am. Hello, Craig Rainey. How are you doing?
Hey, Alan, what's your last name?
My last name is Lee.
No, okay.
I don't say like Robert E. Lee because they're tearing down all these statues, but it is spelled the same way. Alan Lee.
There you go.
Alan Lee's the trusty sidekick. Usually he's in studio with me, but he had an emergency and he said I can do it on the phone. And I was like, all right, we'll call you too.
Yeah, cool. I listened to a couple of your podcasts. They're interesting. That one with Ron Jeremy was a hoot.
With Ron Jeremy?
I didn't listen. In fact, I wasn't at that one, by the way, Craig. I was also sick for that one.
Oh, heck.
No. So, I'm glad you found. I didn't listen to it. What did you find interesting about it?
Well,
I didn't get a chance. Well,
he's
a legend.
He is a legend, and the thing is, he was active when I was younger. You know, he was the main guy, and just whatever. I'm not going to incriminate myself, but. That thing about Jennifer Aniston not wanting him on the movie set with him, that was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was unaware of that.
Yeah. He's what's funny about Ron Jeremy is his manager is my manager, so I don't know if that's like a good thing because I'm in the comedy industry, he's in the porn industry, so I'm not getting a lot of porn work.
Well, if you watch many porn movies, there's a lot of comedy to it, so they're more closely related than you're probably comfortable with.
Exactly. Now, Craig, we're going over your acting credits, and I just have a question because you're known for the Innocent Saga, which how many movies of those are there? Is there 13? Because I always thought a saga was like three.
No, this the saga it was 10 films, and they were done in 12 months, and Brett Malzer, who was the director, he shopped it to Hollywood, and they said, well, you know, we like it well enough. We'll do, you know, one or two, but we won't do 10. And he said, well, you know, my actors are going to age, continuity is going to be an issue, that kind of thing. So he decided to do all 10, and he did 10.
Wow.
And now it's an internet series, which there's too much to talk about during a single podcast, but he turned the whole thing into a series called The Innocent Saga. It's on YouTube. It's worth watching.
Yeah. Well, that was like, cause I remember, last time I saw you was like 6 or 7 years ago. You were telling me that that's the main thing you're filming right now. And then I look it up,
yeah,
there's 10 of them. I was like, wow.
Yeah. I played the main bad guy in that one. That's what I do. I do bad guys and cops. That's,
That's great. I saw some of your footage. We saw your reel. It was cool.
Oh,
Alan saw your reel. I don't have a reel. I've only done like two things, and I figured, what's the point of putting two things on an 8-minute? I don't know. I'm not very active in the acting.
Well, I mean, you're good. I videotaped one of your acts once, but you should just get somebody on the crowd to videotape you, and you know, have somebody shoot. You're in Hollywood. Have somebody, you know, LA, have somebody put a reel together for you. That's what I did. Mutt Productions. So I did a few films with a couple of big ones. That was one, Return of Johnny V, which has done really, really well. I played again the main bad guy in that one. Those guys put the reel together for me. So
The Benders. I saw clips from the Benders.
Yeah.
You did in 2014.
Yeah, it's. I've kind of moved away from the acting thing. It's really tough. It's really tough in the Austin market to get in, because Austin is, they call themselves Texas Hollywood, but yeah. LA film companies come out here. They you know, I've got an agent still, Condor Artista, out of you know, out of San Antonio, and I've still got an agent. I get calls, and you know, I get all the email, but. You know, it's just, it's tough to get a role. I do features. I don't do commercials or industrials anymore. I just do features. And,
sure.
Yeah, and I'm doing character work. But yeah, I've moved into the author business almost totally.
How many books have you written? Because on your resume it says 4 books, and it's, you just have a new one that just came out a couple weeks ago that's actually getting a lot of praise with the critics right now. And I read that it's getting made into a motion picture right now.
Yeah, that was my first book I wrote, Massacre at Agua Caliente, and it is a Western.
Yeah.
And I was working with actually Mutt Productions, and they just got distribution for The Return of Johnny V, and which is available on Amazon, by the way, and well, everywhere. But those guys, they were saying, man, you know, the film company wanted them, I'm sorry, the distribution company wanted them to do another movie. And most of their guys, all their crew comes out of Paramount and Sony. They've all worked with all those guys. So, I mean, these are good crews. They fly in. They do great work. So, anyway, they said, hey, you know, we either want a film about pets, a film about Westerns, science fiction. And so they were asking me, hey, you know of any scripts? Because I know a lot of people here. I did 60 films in my career. And I said, well, no, I like Westerns, though, because, you know, I've always wanted – I did some cowboy and in West Texas when I was younger. But so just almost on a dare, I wrote the treatment for Massacre at Agua Caliente, and it turned into, I think, an 86-page script. Anyway, we sent it off to let me say this. I did the treatment on it, and then they were going to send it to L.A. to get it written. I said, hey, let me give a shot at it. So anyway, I did it. It won a lot of awards, as period piece. I could go through it, but it did really well. But all the filmmakers with the notes, they said, man, it's too long for us, so we had to cut it down. Secondly, they said that the main character is, we need to bring his likability up, so he didn't kill quite so many people. And they said, oh, you know, we want this character to live longer. So the script was rewritten about 4 different times. The last one, which is the final copy,
right,
is really quick. It's a really fast movie, but the buzz has died down over it. But well, I decided to do a novel based on the original script, the full script. And so that's when I wrote it. And
so you wrote the script first, then the novel.
Yeah, it's completely backwards. You're right, completely backwards.
Wow.
Typically, to,
yeah,
it's interesting. It's
so anyway, I did that one. Then the my latest one, which is my passion, is it's called Stolen Valor, a Carson Brand novel. I've got it's an action adventure. It's a Jack Reacher, Jason Bourne kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so I finished the first book last year. Yeah, I mean, oh, good. I'll make sure I get you a couple copies over there. But Anyway,
oh,
so
that's
I,
very sweet.
I wrote,
I'm, yeah, I see the Stolen Valor. It's Carson Brand.
Yeah, it's in. I've done in 10,000 copies of it, ebook and paper book, are in people's hands right now. Some were sold, some were given away, some were promos, that kind of thing. So that's out there. And then the second one I'll be finished up with. In fact, I was working on it right before you called. It'll be done by final edit by the end of July. And then I've got a couple of reviews I'm getting. So hopefully by mid-August, I'll have it out on the market. Oh. And that's the second in the series.
I really hope I didn't call while you were in the zone of writing something really, you know, and then you forget. You'll be like, oh, why the fuck did he call me now? I was in the mood. You know?
Keith, I find I'm never really in the zone. when I go back and edit it, sometimes it's ugly. So it's bad, but
well, because I write scripts and right now I don't have any stand-up shows because of this coronavirus. So like I'm doing a lot of podcasting for people, and then they call me right in the middle when I'm in the zone, and then I do the interview, and then I forget what I was gonna write, and I was like, ah, fuck that podcast.
Yeah, well, but your podcast. I mean, hopefully people are listening to this. I know I've, like I said, I listened to a couple of them, and I mean, it's good content. And you've got, went on your Facebook page, I guess you got 4,500 friends and followers. So, you know, it can't be all bad.
Yeah.
And plus, you're a good comedian. You're skilled, you know, so I would stick with it.
You know, Alan didn't believe me, but I wanted to see, you know, without like dropping hints or whatever, how do you and I know each other?
Well, you're my nephew.
See, I told you, Alan Lee.
Yeah, no, I knew he was a relative. I just didn't realize that you had two actors.
Yeah.
Well, interesting story about
See, that was about interesting
Keith.
To me.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting story about Keith. When he was born on July 4th, by the way, that's his birthday. When he was born, I was at a lake house in Kingsland, Texas. And sitting across the table from me was Lady Bird Johnson. Because when I went to college, my roommate was her grandson. And anyway, we got the phone call at the house. There were no cell phones back then. We got the phone call at the house, and I got it. And his dad told me, hey, by the way, my son was born. You know, his name's Keith, blah, blah, blah. And I went, well, all right. I mentioned it to Ms. Johnson, which nobody who knows her calls her Lady Bird. And Ms. Johnson said, well, that's just fabulous. And best wishes to that young man. And I hope he has a fruitful and long life.
Oh.
So. You were toasted by a former first lady.
Oh, that's pretty exciting.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Because, you know, Craig, I'm a Texan by way of Houston, you know.
Oh,
I grew
right.
up in Houston and graduated University of Houston. And so I'm a Houstonian. You know, so I'm
well, brother,
of Texas.
Yeah.
That makes me feel better about this whole podcast.
No, I love Texas. I mean, I fucking love Texas. And, you know, I actually miss it in some ways. So, you know, and I'm a huge Western fan, huge. I mean, movies, books. In fact, believe it or not, I'm reading Shane, the original Shane by Jack Schaefer.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But, you know, and I'll tell you, I was amazed. It's a beautiful, beautifully written book. It's like, you know, It's and I'll tell you what's funny about it. The copy I got was from some middle school in Utah. And when I read how they treated Shane back in the 70s, it was required reading in classes in high school.
In high school,
it was destined. It is, and it was destined to be a classic. And the movie's a turd compared to the book. And of course, I grew up on.
Thank you. No one has said that to me. No one has said that to me. I didn't want to put it that way. Because I'd be like, oh, God, the movie is a turd compared to the book.
It is.
Wow.
I mean, it was poorly acted, I thought, and just come from me. You want to see some poor acting, watch my movies. just look, Craig, get on CraigRaney.com and check out the links. You'll see some bad movies. But the thing about Shane is it was, you know, I loved all Westerns. And but my books that I grew up with, Jane Grey, Max Brand, I read some Louis L'Amour. Louis L'Amour. Larry McMurtry, who wrote Lonesome Dove. I love his books. I just finished reading one a few days ago. But when I wrote Massacre at Agua Caliente, I wanted it to be a throwback to those old novels. And Shane was written, I think it was written in the 50s, maybe the 40s.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, back then, you know, you could still talk to your grandparents and they'd be able to tell you, you know, some stories that would help motivate you. But, I mean, I'm from San Angelo, West Texas. And
I grew up, I know San Angelo is.
100,000 people in the middle of nowhere with nothing to do. But, you know, I just love the genre, and I cowboyed a little bit, like I said. And
absolutely.
I had a question. Yeah. I had a question about the cowboying. You said you cowboyed. Mm-hmm. Did you ever shoot anybody?
Well, I was in the military for a short amount of time, but never had the opportunity to shoot anybody. We were field artillery, so we blew up some countryside pretty close to some of our forward observers a couple of times. That was a mistake, but never did that. But cowboying, I worked on a ranch just outside of San Antonio.
Was that Grandma Vicky's ranch? Because then she used to have a ranch. That? Grandma Vicky used to have a ranch, right?
Well, she and my dad worked on one.
Yeah.
But this was one. It was just me, and I used to bathe in a horse trough, and I rode. We had six rough horses. I had to ride up every single day. We had a 1,000 acre lease 5 miles away, so I had to ride horseback over there, ride fence, fix up, make, you know, count cattle, and so it was real cowboying. And I mean, I used to break horses, and you know, I got good enough I could rope a pig, which is saying something. But you know, I did that for a couple years, and you know, but anyway, I still drive a truck, which is a side effect.
Well,
of it. But,
that's a great part of you. That I'm sure, you know, you is in your books, you know, when you've had that visceral actual experience as a cowboy,
it's funny. Well, from Houston, you know, I live in Houston. I love it, by the way. I'm one of the few Texans that say that, but, you know, the cowboy aspect of it, it helped a lot. I did a lot of stunt work. I did a Western Bass Reeves, which was picked up and changed to All Hell to Pay. It was about the first, black federal marshal, Bass Reeves. And I played Bob Dozier, of course, the main bad guy. So I did all the stunt riding with the horse handler on that thing. And so there was a lot of times I'd exchange clothes and I'd just ride. And then the next scene I was, you know, playing my character. But, you know, writing Westerns was something that I wanted to write this Western in the style of the old Max Brandt and Zane Grey's. And, you know, and Shane was written that way. And, you know, it's a little more wordy. There's a little more. Nowadays, a woman's sexy because of what she wears. Back then, nape of the neck,
sure,
roundness of the wrist, turn of an ankle, you know, that just would drive these guys crazy. But
Craig, how long does it take you to write a book? Like, because,
man, good question. I did Stolen Valor in a year. It was really probably 10 months, I think. Agua Caliente, from the time I first wrote the script till I finished the final draft, was 6 years on the novel. And it was because I was working. I had a lot of stuff that I was doing. I was in a lot of film. I was doing a lot of work there. And I didn't, you know, when you exhaust your creative juices on that, it's kind of hard to sit down behind a computer and say, okay, well, let's restart this and write something. So when my acting career, as I got older, as it started to die down, and, you know, it's a career with a tongue in cheek on that thing. But as I stopped doing it, you know, I needed another outlet. So I picked the book back up, and my wife, she really pushed me. She said, look, by the end of this year, you need to have it done. So it was, my book was published in 2018, and then Soul of Valor in 2019, the next one. So it's about a year each one.
So did she say, like, no sex until you get it done?
She would never do that because I'm such a phenom in bed. And now that's my ode to my family.
I don't know, but like, that would motivate me to finish a book in a day. You know what I mean? I don't know. Just me.
Well, it's like when you write a screenplay, you know, I've written two, and, you know, Agua Caliente, and then I have a film company that's looking right now at Stolen Valor. It has a little bit to do with human trafficking, and that's the thing. It takes place on the border, and there's human trafficking, that kind of thing, and I did a lot of research on it, and a lot of what came out, the tunnels under the Rio Grande, the way that the trafficking that goes on, where it goes, there's all that's in there. And it's funny because when I wrote it about there's some Sicarios and everything else, the way that they were vetted, all of a sudden it comes out, the Sicario movie comes out, well, they're doing this, doing that. And it's, you know, it's pretty vicious the way they do business, but they run their organizations like a corporation.
Yeah.
And my second book, Dark Motive, it has to do with a little bit of protest, which it's funny. I'll just say this. It had to do with protests and some organizations that organized protests and put them together.
Right.
And I was sitting here watching these riots and these protests and going, man, there goes my hook on my book right there, because they're now doing it and it's all coming out. Everything that I'd researched, you know, and this is a lot of Antifa's behind this. Oh, great. You know, I've changed the name.
That's amazing.
But nobody believes it. And then I was sitting there watching the riots going, oh, crap. There goes the hook for my book. But I'm keeping it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm amazed at that human trafficking element and these tunnels that you talk about. You know, I've been following it on YouTube about a lot of these underground tunnels, even dumps. They call these deep underground military bases that were put there. I don't want to take away from the conversation, but I'm really amazed that you were able to integrate that idea itself, because that's very current right now, Craig.
It's funny about the human trafficking thing is it's pretty vicious and dark, because I was actually on a project where we were writing a documentary about it, and I had to do research too. And what I found out is kids also help them take other kids. And I just, like, that's just, it's kind of cruel because you're brainwashing kids to do it too. You know what I mean?
Well, you're exactly right, Keith. And at the beginning of the book, in fact, when I wrote the script and they wanted me to lean the script a little more, because it's in there, but they wanted me to lean the script a little more towards human trafficking, I wrote a prologue for the book. And what it does, it talks about one of the main characters in there, how she was kidnapped and trafficked. And she was taken from Juarez. Well, Juarez is the kidnapping capital of Mexico. And these cartels, what they will do is they'll hide these trafficking kidnaps, these young girls, amongst the demographics that already exist. And, you know, you're not going to get above the fold coverage on any newspaper from that. So it showed how she was trafficked. And because she was so attractive, one of these lieutenants got hold of her, but she got the nickname of the Black Widow, because every time she was with him, they tended to die. And then she went to the next guy, but she was saved, because when a woman is trafficked, her lifespan drops to months as opposed to years. And anyway, so this focuses on, I did a lot of research on it, and it's a horrible thing. But these drug cartels, because of the legalization of pot and other drugs are probably going to follow, it's no longer as profitable for them to traffic drugs. So they're moving towards human trafficking, because they're never going to legalize pirated hot chicks. They're never going to do that. And there's big
That's
money
right.
for it. And, you know, in every border town, they can harvest these girls. And anyway, but one thing you were saying, Alan, that makes total sense, is at the beginning of the book, in that prologue, it talks about the team that goes out and how long it takes for them to identify these girls and to get close to them, because they've got these guys that are, you know, the prettiest and the sweetest guys that get up there and they get to know them, not to date them or anything, but just to find out what their, you know, what their habits are. And then when they do their harvest, as they call it, then what they do is they just go grab these girls because they know where they're going to be. And, you know, then they're gone. And it's an insidious business. I don't see how in the 21st century it can go on, but it does.
Craig, do you ever get scared by the stuff that you write? Like, I guess, have you ever like gotten scared where like maybe like a cartel member will read this and come after you?
You know, I've had people tell me that, and even members of law enforcement who I know. I got a buddy of mine I was in college with. He's a federal marshal, and when he said that, you're kind of playing with fire. But I mean, I'm really generic about the, I don't know, you know, I don't use any of the names, but I'm very generic about which cartel it is and what they're doing. But, you know, a lot of it is, I really avoid facts. This isn't a documentary. It's fiction.
Right.
And as fiction, it's not taken as seriously. It's kind of like this, my next book has some, you know, has some terrorist camps. A lot of people don't know, but there are over 60 terrorist camps in the United States right now, and they operate unhindered by the law enforcement. And the reason for it, there's one outside of Houston, by the way, Alan, in Sweeney.
Oh,
and
geez.
What they do is they turn these into more training camps. So you've got, you know, Ivy League professors that are teaching kids about how to, you know, hide behind social justice to, you know, get the, to, you know, so anyway, yes. Part of my book is on that. The one I'm writing right now is
that's
part of
great.
That. But,
that is a great, great subject. I'm working on a mercenary cowboy, an urban cowboy, who is actually not trained on a ranch and has that comedic element in it. And so he does the best he can to mimic everything he knows about being a cowboy, but he doesn't actually have real-time experience. And so, you know, he decides to go after the bad guys. And so, you know, it has that you know, comedy of errors, and it's still action and suspense. And many of the villains I'm thinking about, you know, like I mean, to say this, but a George Soros type. Mm-hmm. You know George Soros.
Yeah, oh, I know George. He's curious.
I'm sorry?
I don't know if George Soros is such a comedic character, but he'd be a good bad guy.
That's correct. That's correct. And God, there's so much stuff. And, you know, I never thought that watching Bond films, the villains in Bond films, that there actually would be about three or four of these guys become reality in the world. That's the funniest thing to me. Well, it's funny in the sense that, you know, how art imitates life, and life imitates art. You know.
Yeah, I wanted to have everybody was asked to say, in Gilligan's Island days, he said, so which would you prefer, Ginger or Marianne? But so in Bond, who is the best Bond? Who is the best actor portraying Bond, in your opinion?
Me?
Oh, both of y'all.
Well, you go first,
I'm
Alan.
I'm a Sean Connery guy.
You're a Sean Connery.
I'm a Sean Connery guy.
I think Pierce Brosnan was the best Bond.
Really? Pierce Brosnan? That's a good one. I'm totally Daniel Craig. If you read the Ian Fleming book.
Really? You're Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he is the closest to... He is. And you know, he gets beat up and hurt and shot and poisoned and everything else. And that's what happened in all of the Ian Fleming books is, you know, Bond was...
Yeah.
He wasn't this handsome rake. He was... I mean,
no.
He was a renegade.
No.
And the only reason that M liked him was because M... Kind of like the rebel side. Every girl likes a bad boy. You know how it is. I mean, you guys know you're both bad boys. So
that's correct.
You know, you're covered
that,
up in
that
girls.
Is correct.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading an article about the Men of Bond, and they were doing this big thing on Pierce Brosnan, how that ended that company just totally fucked with him because they promised him a 5-picture deal, and I guess his last Bond movie was so bad because it bombed. It bombed at the box office partly due to the 9/11 attacks, and it wasn't really fair against him. And he said that they just chewed him out like that. And I thought he was the best Bond because he got beat up a lot, but he was also the pretty boy who wasn't really the pretty boy. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm a Bond fan, and I thought that I liked him. Sean Connery, what am I trying to think of? The Saint guy. What is his name?
Robert
Moore. I don't remember his name. He wouldn't have played the Saint back in that series. Help me, Alan.
I think it was Robert Moore, wasn't it?
Similar to Sean Connery.
Yeah, he was. Oh, man, everybody listens to this. And you idiot, you should know that name. But anyway, those guys, they were a little too pithy for me. They were a little too British. And bad. You know, my wife, she's nearly British anyway. She's Canadian. They're, you know, a Commonwealth country. But anyway, when I like Pierce Brosnan because he got a little Timothy Dalton knew absolutely not. But Pierce Brosnan, I thought he was good. I really liked him. But I think that part of that.
Did you like Pierce Brosnan? I liked him.
Yeah, I did. I think
I liked him because he was so British, and I thought it was funny because it was a prissy nature. But he did back it up convincingly that he could kick some ass.
Oh, yeah. Well, those guys.
You know, and I thought that was interesting.
I liked him.
Well, I mean,
Pierce Brosnan
shoots a Walter,
Walter
PPK. I mean, how badass can you be, honestly?
Oh, no. That's a wonderful pistol. I'm quite frankly, I'm shopping for one.
Now, Craig, another question.
That's one of my loves, is guns.
Another question.
I'm a Sig Sauer guy on Glock. Those are my two.
Another.
I just got a competition Glock. I got it about a week ago. It came. And
is it
model 9mm? It's the 43. I mean, no, excuse me. It's the 41. Yes.
Okay.
And I'm a happy camper.
Alan, I want to ask this question before we run out of time because I think it's very important. because it has a lot to do with a lot of different elements. You've done cowboying, you've done acting, you've done writing, you've done producing, you've done stunting, you've also done singing and drumming. Like, all those elements, like, how, like, as an artist, you know, you're top of the class. Like, how, I mean, your mind has to be crazy brilliant to be able to do all those things.
Keith, I love you for that, and I wish you were true. You don't have to be smart to be Craig Rainey. I'll just tell you that. I forgot about the drumming music thing. I picked up drumsticks May 21st, 1994, and got lessons from Jeff Ryder out of San Antonio, world-rated drummer, and awesome drummer. In fact, I was watching a ZZ Top documentary on Netflix last night, and I knew a few of those people. In fact, the drummer that Billy Gibbons talks about was our piano player for a number of years, because the reason he and Billy split up was because they just did a gig and they were the Moving Sidewalks and they became Top. And then he was their drummer, and he had a message from God that he's going to be a piano player the rest of his life. So he quit, and Billy got mad at him, paid him, said, "Look, you'll never work with me again, blah, blah, blah." So that's when he picked up Frank Beard. But the funny thing is, Milo, that's not his name, it's his stage name, the piano player he played with. Mickey Gilley, Sleep at the Wheel, Mo Bandy, George Strait, everybody. Mm-hmm. But the reason I say that, Keith, is to answer it this way. I've been surrounded by people that are really artistically talented, and I always thought to myself, man, I'd really like to be an artist. I'd like to be somebody that creates things. And I never looked at myself that way, because I was always the promo guy. I was a sound man. I was a marketing guy. I was a guy that built websites. I did this, I did that. Yeah, I played drums. But, you know, what do you call a guy who hangs out with musicians? A drummer. And, you know, I did some lead singing and everything else. And then just recently, at my age, I went, well, shoot, I've done quite a bit. I guess I can call myself an artist to an extent. So I'm not brilliant, but Keith, I appreciate you saying it. It means so much to me. I just work hard at stuff, you know, and I really try to learn as much as I can about it. I study it. I see what the pros are doing, like you, you're a pro comedian. I do what they do, and that's why I'm successful.
Have you ever thought about doing comedy?
Say that one more time.
I said, have you ever thought about trying comedy?
Yeah, but I've been working on my comedy routine for about 12 years now.
Yeah.
And so that'll tell you how good I am at it. What you guys do is way beyond me. I mean, I've done public speaking, MC work. I've done a lot of stuff. I've been a motivational speaker and sales trainer. But what you do is there's a skill for it. You know, there's a God-given skill that allows you to do what you do. And Keith, I remember when you first got started, how hard it was for you, but you never gave up. And that's one of the things that we have in common. It's one of the things I've loved most about you. That's why you're my favorite nephew, because you never give up. You never quit. And you've achieved a lot of celebrity and a lot of acclaim. And, you know, it's, you know, people that we all just read about here in little old Texas,
right?
You know, and so no, I have not ever thought about going into your realm, because it's not a skill set that I have.
Well, I think that you do have that, because you have all these other skill sets, and I think that that's just another knuckle on the belt that you could try and observe. I know guys who get into comedy when they're like 70 years old, like Marty Ross, and now he's on American's Got Talent, and, you know, he's the 80-year-old who's probably going to die before he wins it. You know what I mean? And he has... Like, I don't mean to like go no filter. Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, he just started 10 years ago and he's already on America's Got Talent. So what I'm saying is, I think
you are irreverent, if nothing else.
What I'm saying is, no time like now. Like, Frazier Smith started comedy when he was 40, maybe 50, and now he's like the house.
I forgot that.
You know, Frazier.
Well, it's not an age thing; it's a talent thing. Yeah. And I bask in the glow of you guys who have that skill set, that talent. I don't have to do everything. I mean, I don't have to try everything. I'm really happy being an author. I was pleased with my little acting career that I had. It was for me. I didn't do it to watch the movies. I didn't do it for the money, obviously. I don't know if you know this, but only 10% of all people in acting make over $2,500 a year.
Yeah.
So, and I was in the top 10%, barely. Yeah. But, you know, I've done everything that I've ever wanted to do. I decided to play drums, and I picked picked up drums, started playing them, took lessons, and everything. Decided to be an actor. I did that. I decided to write a script. I did that. I decided to be an author. I'm doing that. So no, it's not an age thing, Keith. I'm and Alan too. I just appreciate. I will go watch your shows and sit there at your feet and just love every second of it and laugh my way through it. I mean, I'm happy doing that.
I don't think you'd say that to Alan.
What's your favorite Western movie?
You know,
you don't have to.
Kind of. It's either Lonesome Dove or Unforgiven.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Unforgiven is on my list. But I'm such a traditionalist, I go back to Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, it's the remake was better than the original Magnificent Seven with Yul Brynner.
Yeah.
I like the remake.
100% agree.
Yeah. No, I like the remake. And, of course, the Wyatt Earp with Val Kilmer, Tombstone. Oh. How'd you like that?
No, Tombstone. Yeah, I wouldn't. I love Tombstone. I wasn't a big fan of Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner, but Tombstone, of course.
No, I and wasn't it's either. It's funny. Yeah. That's correct. I wasn't either. The Costner one. Yeah.
Well, it's Tombstone. I thought Val Kilmer did a great job. And by the way, you know what a huckleberry is?
Yeah.
It's a pallbearer.
Oh, my.
I'll be your huckleberry.
Say that again.
Okay, a huckleberry, when Doc Holliday said, "I'll be your huckleberry," that's a pallbearer. That was the nickname. That was a moniker for a pallbearer. So he's basically said, I'll take you to hell.
That's right. No, that's
Val
right.
Kilmer just wrote a book called I'll Be Your Huckleberry.
Mm-hmm. He's talking about being a pallbearer.
Yeah, and I thought it was for Huck Finn.
What did you say? Well, he just couldn't bear the pressure. That's not exactly
Now, Craig,
he couldn't bear the strain. Sorry.
One of the last questions I have for you is how come do you think that it's so hard for Westerns to be made into movies and for books to be actually published for Westerns? Because that's the one genre where it's really tough to actually get it moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Here's the answer.
I was about to say that. Go on.
Here's the answer. I've thought about this. Westerns are expensive to make. Any period piece is expensive to make. They're super expensive. You can't, and there aren't many movies made in Hollywood anymore, mainly it's TV because it's so expensive. But even if you go out of Louisiana or New Mexico, where they're really friendly to film companies, you're still going to pay $1,000 a day for a horse. You know, it's expensive. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, the set and the costuming and everything else. That's the reason that movies are so tough to find Westerns. Books, ironically, they're not as popular. Westerns are very much it's a clicky niche and not too many people buy them. You know, the old guys like me, we buy them, but young people, you're not going to see many millennials with worn copies of Westerns in their library.
Yeah.
I will say one thing, Craig, about the popularity of Westerns, and you probably already know this. You know who Clarence Mulford is, right? The author of Hopalong Cassidy and the Bar 20 Boys.
Well, you're well read, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. In the 1930s, the entire planet, especially the United States, had a very good idea and followed those books in the newspapers. And it was unbelievable how popular that was. They talk about the TV show, but the books themselves, I was able to get a set that they threw out of the English library, and I scooped them up. And they're actually 1930 library copies with the illustrations. And I got such a kick out of reading them. And Louis L'Amour Mulford said Louis L'Amour would be the inheritor of Hopalong Cassidy, and he wrote four of them. And it's a great character. I mean, it is an unbelievable great character.
Okay.
So I'm just throwing that into the mix here about the popularity of Western books.
Well, yeah,
thanks.
I wish the modern market was as popular, but movies aren't, books aren't.
You and me both. I still believe there will be a comeback. That might sound like pie in the sky, but I believe they will come back.
So, Craig,
we was going to get together in LA and have a beer. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So we're running out of time, but before we ask where the folks can follow you at home, we want to hear. Do you have any great Danny Trejo stories?
Oh,
I was on a Danny Trejo movie, and it was This is with Mutt Productions. It's called The Green Ghost, and I don't know that it's gone anywhere. I know it's on IMDb, as am I, but I didn't have the chance to meet Danny Trejo. They had a soundstage set up in Lockhart for this movie, and it was a big martial arts film, and they were going to, you know, they were going to launch a series off of it. They put a lot of money into this thing, and in fact, Michael Almost, Edward James Almost's son, was the director on it, and a very talented guy. And so is his brother. The whole family. I've met a lot of them, but Trejo was on set the day after I did mine because I had a really small role in it. Anything that they did, they said, we have to have a Craig Rainey in it. I did one movie where I played a slightly effeminate priest or preacher, and I did a sermon and everything. On this one, I'm in the opening scene, and I'm just some guy that's giving the main character a hard time. But Danny Trejo came the next day. I know they all went to dinner because I saw the photos of it and everything else. I was surprised that, you know, he is as diminutive as he is. I thought he was much taller, but he's about 5'5", 5'6", something like that. And then, Danny, if you're listening, I apologize. I didn't measure you, and I don't want my ass whooped, but I always had the feeling he was a giant guy.
No, he's a tiny guy.
Well, Danny, he's
quite a character.
You just wrote your first joke for your comedy career. You could be like, yeah, I did a movie with Danny Trejo, and I got to tell you, he doesn't have a big machete.
Oh, I was going to take that line, but I didn't port that one with a machete.
Well, Danny Trejo, I tell you, you can't argue with his body of work.
Oh, no, yeah. Definitely not.
Con Air, and of course here in town, you know, I know a lot of those guys that, you know, that did all the Grindhouse films and everything else. But anyway, you know, you can't argue. That guy, he's had quite a career.
Yeah, definitely.
He has. Yeah, he certainly has.
I'm like obsessed with John Cusack, so I watched Con Air at least 3 times a week.
Oh, Cusack, Better Off Dead, greatest movie ever made.
Oh my God, I totally agree. I want my $2.
$2!
So, Craig, where can the folks at home follow you?
Well, I would love them to follow me at craigrainey.com, which is my website. My books are all over Amazon. They're in Barnes and Nobles. Most of the stores in Texas, I should say, have physical copies.
Kindle,
of this COVID-19
Kindle edition there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And Goodreads. I'm international except for Australia, and that's a technical glitch. I'll get that fixed. But we're everywhere. The ebook, I think, is going for $2.99, much to my chagrin. But the paperback. If somebody gets hold of me on my website, it's my email's craig@craigrainey.com. I'll send you an autographed copy. If you guys buy one, you know, somebody buys one. I've already got two going to you, Keith. But
that's sweet. Where
they can follow me.
Oh, very sweet of you. Thank you so much. Well, Craig, we're running out of time. I love you. Thank you for doing the show, man. And you know, next time you're in California, let's do this live. You know, face to face.
I love that. And Alan, if you're ever back in town, come over to my house.
Craig, hey, listen, I'd love to. I think we have a like mind.
Well, I've got a house
pleasure,
and a golf
sir.
Course and swimming pool. We could play golf and swim. So.
Oh, Alan's a huge golfer.
Oh, stop it. I can't hit the side of – that's the silliest thing to say.
I'll stop bringing new content, and you guys go ahead and wrap up your show. I appreciate you having me.
All right. Thanks, Craig.
Thank you, sir.
That was Craig Rainey, guys. Give him a follow on the...
Wow.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, you have a hell of a relative there. I mean, man, I'll be quite frankly, I get a real kick out of this this guest, and he's wonderful. And you never mentioned him at all, and he's from Texas and all this. So, you know, he's great, man.
I'm a very private individual, Alan Lee. Like, I don't like... Like, people say, like, I'm actually, like, no filter and I say too much on social media. I actually don't. I say enough to get the point across. But I'm very, I like relationships to be between relationships. Like, someone asked me the other day, how close am I with you?
Yeah.
And the truth is, I'm very close
with
you.
Oh,
and
boy.
I made them think that
we are.
Yeah.
We are.
but I made them think that
we're
I wasn't.
Quite close. And,
and that's like my humor, you know what I mean? Because like they're like, oh my God, you're not really that close with Alan, but you talk to him all the time. I'm like, well, you know, whatever. You know, it's my unsophisticated sense of humor. It's dark, and I like to make people's minds turn like that. You know what I mean? That's what I get off on.
Listen, you don't have to explain your jokes to me. You don't have to do that. You know that.
Oh my God! If this was a live audience show, that would have been the best joke of you. Ah. All right, Alan Lee. Well,
anyway, listen. You're going to be interviewing a whole bunch of people this week, and it might be even right now.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm going to hit the bottle right now. I'm sorry, I can't do it. I'm going to hit the bottle.
All right. Well, Alan, hey, stay safe in New York,
I'll
man.
I'll be thinking of you.
All right. Well, stay safe in New York, pal.
You listen. Thank you. I can't wait to go, and I can't wait to get back.
Yeah.
But you know, I. You know, you're my bud, and you're doing a great job. So go on and go on to the next show.
All right, buddy. All right.
Which is right now, right?
Yeah, Brian Moses actually canceled. He had an emergency, so we'll do it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, he'll come back.
Yeah.
All right, my friend.
All right, buddy. I got to plug
Take
my
care.
Cameo.
Stay safe.
All right, pal. I got to plug these things.
Good luck in Vegas.
Thanks, man.
Good luck in Vegas.
All right, guys, that was Craig Rainey. Follow him on the social media, buy his books. Also, before we go, I do have a stand-up date, June 24th, Wednesday, in Vegas at Chronicles Catina, 3246 East Desert Inn Road. They're taking reservations. It's going to be social distancing. You can call them at 702-909-7773. Again, that's 702-909-7773. And I'm also on Cameo. Book me on Cameo, and I'll do a shout-out for you and all that no-filter stuff. I don't really care. I just want to make you guys laugh. Also, my stand-up special is now on everywhere. It's on Spotify. I don't get any money for that, but it's on Spotify, so if you want to listen to it, go to Spotify. My manager's like, hey, you gotta get the Spotify numbers up. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And but you can buy it on Sony or Mad Records or Apple iTunes at Keith Reza. Make it happen. Subscribe, rate, and review to the show. Reza Riffs. Follow us on social media. Give us some love on the Apple Podcast. Give us some ratings. We need the love and the joy. Stay safe, everyone. Times are dark, and we will be here to make you laugh. So stay safe. I love you all very much, and we'll catch you guys next week. Bye.
You're listening to Reza Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.